Welcome to another episode of Build It Better, the show where we talk about all things programming and web sort of stuff. I am Adam L. Barrett, sometimes known as Big AB, like Big AB at techhub.social. And I'm here with my wonderful co-host, Jesse Tomczak. Jesse, give him a hello.
I can't. I'm just watching you sort of get through this. Hello, I am Jesse. At J. Tomczak at Moth Social. You can find me there.
So Build It Better is brought to you by our employing company, ThisDot, where we do all sorts of great things like consulting and staff augmentation and pretty much anything you need to build your application. If you need experts, come to ThisDot. Check it out at this.co, thisdot.co. That's my commercial.
Had to spell that for anyone recently? Like,
yeah, I don't know. Isn't this dot co a hard name?
Rough.
Yeah,
like,
it's rough.
Jesse at this dot co. And people look at me and go, okay.
Yeah.
So you're like at this dot, D-O-T dot.
Of course.
C-O. And they just like.
And if you say this dot co, they think you like stumbled into a.
Yeah. I can't remember why I was doing this, but eventually it was like, why don't you write that down for me? And I was like, okay, I can do that.
But they didn't come here to hear about our URL woes. They came here to hear about, well, actually, what are we talking about today, Jesse?
So for architectural things, we're going to talk about transpilation, compilation, compilers, and what your framework of choice is actually doing. Because I feel like there's some fairly large ambiguity about, like, we used to use this word like transpile. Well, we used the words bundle. So like, if you want to roll way back, we used to be like, oh, we bundle our JS and like, we got our gulp and we got our grunt and we got our tasks and we got our thing. And it's taking all of our JavaScript and it's smashing it all into one concat file, which is basically like concat JS. And then like, there was always someone in the office who was like, we need to obscure our JS. And it's like, dude, get out.
But it would like for safety, like, oh yeah. We don't want people reading it. We gotta mung it up a little.
Like,
that's funny.
Not minify it. No, that was a totally separate story. That's totally fine. But this guy was like, yeah, you would use like Obscura, which would like go through and bit replace all that. It was ridiculous.
Hilarious. I love it.
And then you would have the single bundle. And then, you know, we had Babel or ES6 to 5, right? Which would transpile. That I think that's when I first heard of transpile, which would take your ES6.
Everybody first heard the word transpile
and like transpile it backwards to compatible, because browsers were like ES what, right?
Well,
and then
Webpack, yeah, exactly,
would sort of take our stuff and transpile it and code split it, right? So we have all these like small terms. So what is transpiling?
Well, this, like, is what I want to know. Like, I've been letting you kind of go on, but I really want to get down to the heart of the business, which is, okay, I understand what compilation is. It's when you, like, take code, essentially, and you put it into something that the machine understands now. So what is transpilation, and what's the difference?
So I've always thought of the transpilation as, like, if you go through several sort of, like, dry coding books and you build an interpreter first, right? Where you, the interpreter is the halfway point of the compiler, right? Where you take all the code that you wrote and you interpret it into an executable style or usable, like AST, you've got like an AST syntax tree, like you've got all these tokens and bits and parts. And like, you can stop at the interpreter and be like, okay, I'm all set. Like, this is runnable stuff, but it's not machine code. It's just interpreted, like you still have to like run it.
Well, what would run that? Like, would that be, are we talking like that's like bytecode or something? Or
no, like you're that? Not even to bytecode yet. Like, okay. You're literally just to like, so like when you, the thing
you're
in my
sort
head
of a descriptive tokens at this point. Yeah.
Like, you still have to run program, like, which is going to like go through and JIT and like execute all this stuff. So like an interpreter is basically like, make this stuff runnable by the computer.
Okay.
And like,
whether that's just, and so then you move into compilation? Like you said,
so
JIT,
then you take
which
that
is
interpreted
like just,
JIT, and then you run it down into a single byte executable.
And JIT so, is just in time compiled.
Yeah, so like the interpreter compiled will get you up to that point, and then you still have to just in time run. Like you can't run and execute on demand. So that's sort of my mental model. Does that make sense?
It absolutely does. Is that, would you say, like JavaScript, because it's a script and not like a programming language, it's sort of goes into the browser, and the browser then like probably does exactly what you're saying, interprets it, and then just in time compiles it when it needs to do stuff.
Yeah. So you, like when you write JavaScript, like you're never actually compiling your JavaScript. Like the browser, the V8 does that every time. Right. You, when you transpile and all the bundle split code things we do, only brings us up to interpretation. And then we give it to V8, and then it actually executes.
But does transpiling even really do that? Like, is transpiling getting to a point where we're at, you know, just interpreted? Because I have always seen transpile used in, like you said, where it's supposed to be, you know, 6 to 5 or what became Babel, where it's like, I'm going from JavaScript to JavaScript that works. Like JavaScript that might work, like, break in the browser.
Yeah.
But it's so like the even same like level.
Yeah. Like TypeScript is trans, you know, it's transpile step is TypeScript to usable JavaScript, right? The output, I think in our world, the output is always going to be V8 usable JavaScript.
Okay. So I kind of thought that maybe transpiled was a made up word that kind of meant nothing just because somebody didn't want to know the connotations of compiled. Because it felt to me like the definition of compiled is where you take a bunch of code, you know, text, and you turn it into something the machine understands. And so I kind of felt the same way about, like, well, JavaScript is the code, and then V8, instead of it being like, oh, the machine where it's going to like run whatever, it's just like, oh, the browser is what needs to know this. So then it turns it into usable code. And so I was like, transpiled is a made up word. It doesn't make any sense. It's all compiled.
Yeah. It really is a sort of descriptive word to describe a smaller subset of this larger transaction, right? So, you know, you could even say, and you know more about Svelte than I do, Svelte is compiled into JavaScript as a target, right?
So would that be transpilation? Because we're kind of at that same level
Yeah, because you're not making you're making programmable choices, right, to swap out and do tokenization. But it really is a transpilation of like from like your Svelte code doesn't come down to a single byte executable, right? Mm-hmm. Like not compiled to source, like WASM. Like WASM, you write your Rust code and then you hit Rust create gen 3 and you get an assembly level .WASM.
Yeah.
That's compiled.
You're going to say that's closer to compiled. Okay.
Yeah.
So what about that in between step of like bytecode with Java, where it's like, or you know, where you compile this, but it'll run in any Java
sort of environment,
in engine or whatever.
Yeah. In any time in the Java,
regardless
VM.
Of like what, yeah, regardless of like what machine you're on, the VM is just going to take that. Is that transpilation too?
Once you get down to an interpretable bytecode that is not mm-hmm. human readable, you know, now we're sort of splitting hairs. I'm sure like the minified code splitting mm-hmm. stuff that Webpack is
not human readable.
Is not really not human readable either. Yeah. Does it have source maps? I enjoy that you have given me so much rope now that I'm just dangling on the
I don't even know. Like, does any other, and honestly, I honestly don't know. Do we need source maps in anything other than the web? Like, did the web just, like, invent the need for source maps because we do this strange transpilation?
Because we smash our code down. Not that I know of, because the when you do a compile, like C, let's just take C. So you take C and you compile it into bytecode, and then it is an executable dot whatever run.
Right.
There is no source map because it is.
But there kind of is, right? Because it's like, it's got, I can't remember what the word is, but you can remove them and it makes it a little bit smaller, right? It's
like, yeah, so there's like a debug where you can like tighten it down. Like you basically embed that source in there if you want to. Same way with ours where we like in dev mode, it's not everything is back, you know. I guess here's a question.
Yeah.
Is it compiled when it is not reversible?
Whoa. Oh, there's a whole new angle on this. On this compilation, transpilation, constellations thing that we're talking about. Wait, don't know where we went with
that. Oh, you were so there. Hibernation.
Hibernation.
You were looking for hibernation.
I was. In fact, yeah. Anyway, what was I going to say? Yeah. So if you can't go back, but can you ever go back?
You can always reverse engineer, but let's take that edge case off the table. Like
you can't go back after you minify something. You've mangled the variable names. And
yeah. But as long as you've got a source map, you can trace back to the original code, right?
So if you delete your source map, have you just compiled it now instead of transpiled it?
Now it's the wizardry
anymore.
Well, so let's talk about, so like, let's take some concrete examples. So like, Svelte has, quote, a compiler, mm-hmm. right? They have a custom compiler. It takes in your
Svelte language code and you convert it into JavaScript, essentially, and CSS, I guess, and HTML, maybe. I'm not sure about that.
I would say, so now I'm starting, I feel like maybe if you are taking JS to JS, like if the language input and output is the same language, we use transpile instead of compile. So like if you are taking a superset to JS as a target, like TypeScript or Svelte or Solid, right? These all have unidentifiable JavaScript tokens in them, right?
Yeah, so or maybe in the case of Svelte, I think it's actually more like HTML that has a special kind of JavaScript inside it that does sugar special that JavaScript. Added. But the HTML stuff is pretty much the same.
So you've got to essentially change that completely into like compile, right? Those tokens into a JS output. Whereas, you know, 6 to 5 was literally like, hey, fat arrows. No, we don't do that. We're just going to do a simple find and replace, right? You got a fat arrow. Cool. Now it's a function with brackets, right? And you didn't put a return in there. Cool. Now I put a return in there for you, right?
Well, I don't know why we haven't said it yet. And JSX. So this is just like, hey, we got some angle brackets in our JavaScript now.
Yep.
That's just like a feature. So this is transpilation maybe instead of compilation, because we're just going from a new feature of JavaScript that will never be part of JavaScript, but it's a new feature of JavaScript. And then we're just like, oh yeah, we take that feature away and convert it into regular running JavaScript.
Yeah.
Transpiled. Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm convinced, to be honest. I started out the episode thinking like transpiled is a made up word that somebody just made up and doesn't have any real meaning. But now I'm starting to think I get where you're going with this. There's this level of like abstraction. And if you're not going deeper down, you're not really compiling, right? You're just sort of like on the same level-ish.
Yeah.
We're all making stuff for the web. That's all going to go through this like V8 and whatever else, I guess, interprets.
Spider.
I was just thinking like, is it Spider? Like what interprets
Gecko? I forget what CSS? The browser window does that. So V8 does the JS compilation and then mm-hmm. your DOM.
Right. Like, so it'd be like WebKit WebKit would be everything. Yeah. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's probably names for, I know there's names for like the sub pieces. Like
there must be.
Firefox has like Spider Engine and Gecko, and like their CSS engine has its own fun name.
I'm going to Google rendering engine Chrome and see what I get. Blink, of course.
Of course. I knew that. Oh yeah, because Blink is their fork of WebKit.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, Blink uses the V8.
Yeah, Blink.
Yeah,
yeah.
What is? Safari uses JS Core
for the JavaScript part.
Yeah, JS Core Nitro.
What the heck are we talking about again? Compilation.
Compilation.
Hibernation. Got it.
Astrolation. No. Yeah.
Vibrations.
Vibrations. Vibrations. So yeah, so what, so Vite is a compiler, transpiler?
Yeah.
It's written in Go. Vite? I don't actually know off the top of it. That's why I asked
you. If we think about the pieces of Vite, so Vite is like a dev server, mm-hmm. and then as far as I understand, it uses rollup for the bundling part, which I still think is relevant to say bundler. Is bundling just transpiling? Oh, now I'm going down this rabbit hole. But I think
bundler offers, so transpile is a part of bundling. And when you bundle, like you get to be a bundler when you take logical steps to break that up into pieces and don't just take all of it and just spit it out into one JS file.
Right. Okay. So yeah. So it uses rollup as a bundler from what I understand, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so the Vite part, I guess, is just the dev server, right? Then, well, I mean, obviously, it's the collection of all these things. but it runs a dev server that allows you to sort of like, as you're programming, it reads in and it swaps out modules for you and it stores certain things in a cache, presumably. And it sort of does all that just for your development environment. And then for your production environment, it's like, oh, yeah, we use Rollup for that. And it's all tucked away under Vite, so you don't actually even need to know. They could swap out Rollup for something else if something better came along, and you wouldn't even know, right? Which they might even do. Who knows? But presumably, yeah, the core of Vite is just that, like, live compilation of making stuff readable for JavaScript and hot module reloading, and then all the plugins that go around all that make
Vite. Does Vite use Rollup? No, it's using ESBuild.
Well,
that's why.
Maybe both?
No, not both. It is definitely doing pre-bundles on your dev server with ESBuild.
All right. Well, then, I'm sure it used Rollup at one point, but maybe they moved to ESBuild.
They might have used it for...
Why does Vite use both Rollup and ESBuild rather than just ESBuild? Oh, look at this question.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So even though native ESM is now widely available, shipping unbundled ESM is not a good idea. Hence, bundle for production. Why not bundle with ESBuild? Okay. Yeah. So for production, it's still rolling up.
Neat.
Only in prod, because that is how you get more widely available supported use, is because if we did ESBuild and just shipped ESM, ES right. modules, you wouldn't have great adoption because it's not out there everywhere yet. Does that make sense?
It does. So we're set. So
today we learned.
So Vite is using ESBuild to transpile. I'm not sure. Maybe compile. Yeah.
Which is why it's so fast locally, right?
Source code, and then Rollup bundles those into certain, like, you know, whatever bundles that it needs and whatever target, I guess, we're aiming for. And then, Vite handles a dev server part of that as well. Also, which also uses ESBuild.
ESBuild, an extremely fast bundler for the web. So they even just call themselves a bundler. So ESBuild is doing the transpile-y sort of bundle up and cut and split for ES native modules, JavaScript, CSS, TypeScript, and built-in JSX. This could be, maybe it could be a commercial for ESBuild. And it's stupid fast because it's in Go and not JavaScript bundling JavaScript.
Well, you know, I read recently that it has a lot more to do with the algorithms that you're using about the performance than it does about which particular language, but there are top and bottoms where, like, the closer you are to the, I don't know, the machine code, I guess, then actually your best performance is a lot higher than the best performance of JavaScript. But that a lot of the things we think are like, oh, by changing to Rust, we improved, could have been like, oh, but by changing the algorithm, we improved even more, even though we're still in JavaScript. This is what I just read in an article. I don't actually know if that's true because I don't measure these things.
Yeah.
I think that's
the most important part. I feel like anecdotally, like if you figure JavaScript tools bundling JavaScript is like they're using, so you've got JavaScript bundling JavaScript, they're using Node to execute that, that's using C for bindings, that's then using like direct, like
C++.
That stack that's a lot of
there's a lot before you get in there. That's why I think that's where the top out happens, right?
It's as like, opposed to
you
going
can only JavaScript, go so fast because it has to use a lot of stuff before you can get
maybe a couple C bindings,
right?
Maybe like I feel like that's maybe why you get the diagram that's like ESBuild, everything else.
Indeed. I don't know what have we tackled. So we talked about compilation and transpilation. We've sort of defined it, I think. And bundling kind of just includes transpilation, but also does more stuff because it's breaking it up in certain parts.
Yeah, it's doing code splitting, right? Yeah. And it's doing tree shaking, right? So that now you've got this list of things that Webpack has sort of introduced us to as a default that we don't really think about anymore. Like, have you looked into your like dist output folder recently? Because it is a maze of folders with like little tiny hashed JS files in there that are just unreadable.
Right. The hashing for the caches and stuff. And
And
you got to wonder what
file's hashed so that it knows whether or not it's new or not.
You got to wonder what like a quick, dist folder would look like. Because if everything's like into tiny little functions, is broken out into it must just be like a mess in there.
Yeah.
A beautiful, beautiful mess.
Right. And then, you put it all back together with source maps. And then you ship that out there, and then you serve it off of an HTTP server. So it's like, So you asked about WASM, and like WASM is going to take, you know, its language, whatever, and compile it to, and it's a compilation, right? Because it's taking Rust and compiling it to WASM assembly, which you can then convert to WASM Rabbit, which is readable, or WASM, which is like not readable.
That's I didn't know about WASM Rabbit. Presumably this is kind of similar to the Java VM, right? Because then presumably there's something that like takes the WASM and it makes it run on this particular machine, this chip, this whatever, right?
So your WASM is, your WASM is executable anywhere because it's like everything it needs is built in.
But something has to read that, right? Like something has to be like, oh, I am the thing that turns.
Yeah, the same way that like you would do take a C program and do like dot run on your.
Exactly. There's some system in there that is for specifically running that kind of code.
So when Chrome gets WASM support, right? When there's WASM support in your browser or on your server, right? Yeah, you need you need to be able to run that executable.
We need somebody who knows more about this than us coming on the show. I think we've reached our limit of understanding
of transpilation and bundlers. You figure ES Build is out there, you've got ES modules. What do you know about ES native ES modules?
Well, I don't know what you mean. What do I know about native ES modules?
Yeah, bundles ESM and common JS modules.
ES modules is just that's the you know ECMAScript's module system as opposed to like you know common JS or AMD or whatever made up other module systems there were. Right, this is just like, hey, this is ES modules. You can just, you know, if you write your script like this and add script tag, you know, whatever it is, type equals module, then it'll just run as a module and it just works out of the box. Yeah, and it can use imports and other things.
Because if you remember, JavaScript didn't have an ability to read other JavaScript files.
That's why all this mess happened.
Which is why you literally have like common JS, which is like, look, this is sort of fundamental to like doing stuff. And so I find it interesting that a language that is so pervasive has so little of its own stewardship of like,
I think it was never meant to be though, right? This is the little language that could. This is the language that was just supposed to decorate some documents and make some cool little animations maybe or behaviors. And then suddenly people started using it like crazy. And then it was like, oh, hey, maybe somebody went, maybe we could put this on the server. And that's a good idea because it might make IO super easy. And then it went, you know, and actually there were a ton of things before Node, of course. I don't know if you remember, there were a bunch. There's Rhino. There was Jaxer. Yeah. Jaxer was kind of an amazing thing. Anyway, but then, yeah. And then suddenly it's like, oh, this is like the most, you know, one of the most prolific languages in the world now. And now we have to start, hey, you know what? We can make a module system for this because it's sort of important. Hey, you know what? We might want 20 years into this? Classes. Yeah, that seems like maybe a good idea. People like classes. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, this is the language that was never meant to be. It just happened. This is organic.
Although I feel like most things end up this way. If you set out to create a permanent, long-living language, you're going to make all sorts of poor choices and box yourself in. If you set out to make a language on sticky notes with duct tape and chewing gum,
yeah, that's the one that's going to
last forever, right? Yeah. This is fundamentally how life works. Like, how many servers you have out there that are running temporary code that just patched together? I'm making air quotes with my hands for all of you out there.
Oh, you can hear them. You can hear them in your ear.
Those are my air quotes of like JavaScript, you know, and a lot of times, you know, rightfully so, JavaScript is like the duct tape language of like, oh, just write it in, you know, it's fine, just patch it together and we'll fix it later. And then like 10 years later, it's still running.
Before we close this show down, I want to talk about, let's throw back, let's have a retro moment and just talk about when we used to use the task runners like Grunt and Gulp.
Oh,
and
man. Like,
I loved Gulp so much. Gulp
was so great.
And the idea is like, honestly, I remember discovering Grunt and I remember going, oh, wow, this is a really good idea. We've just got some code that's going to run all our little like bundler and our stuff together. And you could make these Grunt plugins. You could share that code too. So you could just be like, oh, hey, we pulled in a thing that's going to like do the CSS whatever it was, crunching for us. Whatever. Yeah. Oh, SAS, yeah. And SAS was a funny one at the time, too. And then I remember Gulp. And Gulp, like, blew my mind because I was like, this is so much better. Because rather than these giant weird configs that I didn't understand, it was streams. Everything was based on streams. There was like this, you know, whatever it is. I can't remember what they're called. I think it's vinyls, which is like a phony file thing or whatever that you could just stream through. So you stream these vinyl files through streams and you just do things one at a time. And then you output. So it's like I input and together. I collect all my little languages things. I pass them through all these streams, which just makes sense. And then I output files. And I'm like, it all makes so much more sense than giant weird configs. I love this. And you could do anything and you could like reorganize and you could add your own. And it was so easy to change things. I loved Gulp.
Well, and they were reusable, right? Cause we had like one that would do the CSS and then like, we would reuse that in certain places. Like you could reuse it to like do the prod site and the marketing site and the dev site and the admin page. And like, you're like, oh yeah, we just use this task, CSS task for like these four different outputs. It's like, oh, we need to rebuild the marketing page. And it's just like, boom, done. It's just, oh, man.
Yeah. But then, like, I don't know where the failings of Gulp were, I guess, because then Webpack took over and just, like, won the day, I think, at that point.
Yeah, if I remember, like, you couldn't actually – everything was global because we weren't doing – when we were doing Gulp, we weren't – you weren't importing anything into your files. It was taking – at the end of the day, it was just one big – file, right, like even I'm trying to think in AngularJS days, because we had a Gulp pipeline, Gulp tasks running with AngularJS, and it would take that whole thing and just squish it together.
Maybe that's where it didn't handle the modules.
Yeah, there were no modules or code splitting or code shaking. Like if you needed something, like it was always available. Like you never had to open a new file and be like, Jay, import blah 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 blah. It was just there she is.
Well, going back in the retro machine here still, there was Browserify. I remember getting really excited about because it let you wrote Node code and then it would like make it work in the browser, which was awesome. We were also using AMD at the time, which was like with Require.js, which is kind of funny named. AMD was the one where you'd have this like very strange little function syntax, but it was valid JavaScript. So you could just use like Require.js, you'd import it first and then you would just like import a script tag with your modules and it would work like, and it would like pull in more. And I think it would use like eval them and then run them. Yeah.
In Solid.js, there's like a JavaScript labels syntax that is valid JavaScript that Solid uses to like hash and parse its stuff that like I'd never even heard of before. It's like what is JavaScript text label something, like it's like colon something something something, but these like obscure that just like Require.js was doing or AMD was doing. You like you take this like obscure like
the Require.js stuff was just normal. Like I actually was like it was just weird to write, but it was normal things. It was like you'd put your array, you'd call a function,
Then
you'd like whatever. It was normal.
It
wasn't some weird corner of JavaScript. It was just kind of neat how it worked. I think System.js was sort of the next level of AMD where it's still doing everything in the browser. It's still like I think fetching all the individual imports and then evaluating them, like fetching them as text and then evaluating them in the browser, and it works. And I think the only problem came was because Node was so like especially at the beginning, it was like, oh, the smallest modules possible. You know, this is the left pad module. So you import that and whatever modules. And so it got to what we have now, which is like, your Node modules folder was full of a billion files. And so then each of these, when you put it into the AMD, the Require.js or System.js now even, it has to fetch each one of them. Like it has to like go across the network, get that and evaluate it. And it happens pretty fast, but it's still doing thousands of them, and so it just takes a really long time to start up, I think.
Yeah.
But
if lets you want to know how fast, delete a node module folder and watch your garbage can count up 660,000 individual files before it throws them all away.
And then I don't remember anything between like Browserify and
Webpack. I don't know. Do you remember when Node split and then there was
IOJS?
IOJS because Node was like not doing anything. Like it was just treading water really for like a couple years And it's like, oh great, now Node is ES5 all over, ES5 all over again.
And can you believe that it reunited back to Node?
That is, I think, that's even the best part. Is like,
yeah, it was like, hey guys, you know what? We agree. We're gonna take your fork, and like, we're gonna do better. And let's just merge all this stuff in, and we're just gonna do better. Except they left the better name, in my opinion, IOJS, and stuck with Node.js, which is
I feel like Node is a better marketable name.
You think so?
Just, IOJS seems.
I mean, IOJS is like what it does. It's JS on the server to make a better IO system, right? Like a non-blocking IO.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know. I think there was a point during that split where the creator of Node said something like, oh yeah, IO is a good name. I would have named it that. Like, I feel like that's true. That could be
Ryan Dahl.
That could be a myth. Yeah, that could be a myth, but I feel like that's true.
He has a new talk up at, I forget what conference, but it's optimization and compilization.
Compilization?
Probably not.
Compilation?
Compilation.
Hibernation?
Yeah. Forget it.
Liberation.
Constellation. Hibernation. Anyway. I totally lost it. It's good.
If anybody gets that joke, by the way, throw it in the comments, because that was a pretty obscure joke.
Anyway. Yeah, I will also, I do not forgive you for making me watch that earlier.
Yeah, cool.
It will haunt my dreams.
Have we talked this subject out?
I think we've covered it. Transpilation. It's a word.
It's a real word.
It might be a made up word to describe an actual thing that the community figured out how to do over the last, 10 years?
Right. It's sort of this like maybe obscurity to it. I do think it's kind of a weird word when compilation works fine, but I guess if there are differences. So,
and honestly, like if you're me and Adam's age, like, and if you've been through this sort of trajectory, it's pretty I understand historically like what we've been doing or what we've been talking about for like the last half hour. Like if you're new, you'd be like, I don't care about any of this.
Yeah.
Dev start, like not even npm start, just like yarn, like npm start, like
npm start,
npm go, like, you know, which I get, right? It's how did we get here and why is Webpack for configurations an abomination?
And some people think it's horrible, but I think it's beautiful.
Beautiful. My thought is it's going to happen, so you can roll with it or you can get old and cranky.
So on that note, this has been another episode of Build It Better, brought to you by Vistot. We will hopefully see you next time. Before we go, though, we always like to do one thing. We like to do a would you rather question.
Matt, I wonder if I cannot think that Tracy is continuing this pattern on the other half of the show.
If she's not, I'd be so
surprised. I doubt she is. I will have to listen to one.
You don't listen to every episode of Build It
as
Better?
As much as I love to listen to myself talk, I probably don't. Although I listened to our last episode because it was hilarious.
Hilarious. If you haven't heard it yet, you should check it out. I'm still doing it. Anyway, would you rather we have...
I have it for you. Would you rather have a project with 110-line JavaScript files or 100,000 JavaScript line files?
Wait, that's a big difference.
Well, okay, so you have 10 100 line files,
yeah,
or 110 line files. Is that better?
Yes, way better.
Okay, and which would you rather have?
I would definitely rather have 110 line files. But now if we get into
100 lines is not a lot.
Right, I agree. I'd still rather 100. I'd rather 110 line files. But
you are a monster.
When we bring this to an extreme,
absolute monster.
I absolutely change my answer, because if it's like, would you rather 100,000 line codes or 100,000 line files with 10 lines each? I definitely want the 100,000 line ones, and I hate them both.
First of all, the idea that VS Code would load 100,000 lines of JavaScript is hilarious.
I've definitely seen 80,000 lines in a VS Code, and it used to like crash it, and now it loads pretty good.
Yeah.
So, something's changed.
On the last rant, I love that people are like, Electron apps are awful. They're an abomination. And they're like talking to you using VS Code. I'm just like, cool. That's a great story, dude. All right, that's all we got. I would take the 10,000 line files because I'm not a monster.
Yeah, you're a good man.
Or even 100 lines. 100 lines fits top to bottom. I don't even have to get
it. Fits on one screen even.
Yeah, I don't even have to get like a weird vertical screen. Like I can just use this screen.
It's completely fine. 10,000 line files is absolutely fine. I don't know. I just got the idea of how. Yeah, anyway, it doesn't matter.
100 files? And well, they're all, you're right. Let me guess. You know what? There are 100 files. They are all named index.js and they're in barrel folders. Yeah? Is this what you're telling me?
Yeah. Well, I have the VS Code plugin that changes the name if they're all indexed.
Hate your project already.
It's fine. All right. Thank you very much. We'll see you next week.
Bye, everyone.